You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It's a pleasure to have joining us, I believe for the first time, long overdue, Robert Charles. He is a former Assistant Secretary of State responsible for international narcotics and law enforcement affairs during the Bush administration. He is a naval intelligence officer as well as a trained litigator who has served, in addition, in the White Houses of George H.W. Bush and prior to that, my old boss, Ronald Reagan. He is the founder, president, and managing member of the Charles Group, LLC. He is, well, a utility infielder, and we're delighted to welcome him. Robert Charles, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Frank.
Let me talk to you first about something that was in your former portfolio at the State Department, narco-trafficking. We were just discussing with Russ Dallin the unbelievable freefall of the nation of Venezuela, now clearly no longer a democracy. In fact, a narco-trafficking thugocracy, I think, is probably more accurate to say. A subject for the upcoming Summit of the Americas. Another problem that is looming that I'd love to get your thoughts on, knowing you to be a serious student of these matters as well as a practitioner, is the prospect that a similar fate may be in the offing for our neighbor to the south, Mexico, especially if the prospective frontrunner in a presidential election there, a gentleman by the name of López Obrador, were to come to power. Robert Charles, what are your thoughts on all of that?
I think, Frank, you are prescient to have turned the great circling searchlight onto this hemisphere. It has been away for a while. And I think you're prescient for several reasons. First, you're right about Venezuela. Venezuela is in free fall. It is a socialist country that has migrated rapidly toward the dictatorship communist end of the spectrum. Its people are starving. Its energy sector is collapsed. And the result of that, I think we can fairly predict, is going to be a spike not only in domestic crime, but refugee cross-border flows, elevated involvement in drug trafficking, which they are already involved in, and really a crisis in our own midst that we all have to be at least thoughtful about, because trying in some way to preempt that is probably important for all the allies, all of us in this hemisphere. The second thing that you point to is Mexico, and you're right, there's an election this summer, which will be pivotal, as there is in Colombia, by the way. And both of those countries are really source countries for a large amount of the drugs that come into this country. Mexico is a source of black tar heroin and marijuana, large quantities. Colombia, of course, is a huge source of both cocaine and heroin. And one of the things to note about the white heroin coming out of Colombia, and in particular the coca crop, is that we've seen 3 years now, because we walked away from support for the counter-narcotics efforts in that country, we've seen 3 years of double-digit increases in coca production, which, if you just do the math and look carefully at a map and go back to the 90s, you can see what that's going to mean. We're currently in the midst of an opioid and heroin crisis in the United States, as well as synthetics and drugs like fentanyl that come from China. But we're also about to see a wave of cocaine, unfortunately, ramping up. And I spend time with agency heads around the government, and I will tell you they're very concerned about it. So if you put those three countries together and the sources of instability within them, I think we have what amounts to a crescent of real concern in this hemisphere. I would hate to see Colombia return to the bad old days. The United States worked collectively with them, methodically with them over the last 15, 20 years to put them on a track where they're now a tourist destination and things are good there. Mexico is in turmoil. I mean, frankly, it was only 20 years ago or so that people in Mexico City left their doors unlocked. Today, it is unfortunately a place swept by both crime, drug-related crime, and unfortunately, in some ways, a potential sort of a view of what could happen in not just the southwestern United States, but across the United States, if we don't both work together with them to battle the narcotics issue and understand that a degree of fair play is obviously needed in the trade environment.
Chilling prognosis, to say the least, Robert Charles. Let me switch to the United States, though, for a moment with you, Robert. You have legal training and have been writing at FoxNews.com about some of the latest developments in this bizarre saga of the pursuit of the president by the special prosecutor and, it seems, elements of his own Justice Department. One that caught my eye was an analysis of what these FBI raids on some of the work and residential properties of the president's personal lawyer, Cohen, has given rise to in terms of a threat to all of us. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, you know, Frank, you're absolutely right. And as you know, better than almost anybody, I think, in the media industry and from your life experience, freedom is both gained and often lost by inches. And we don't see the migration of the tide away from the freedom we had until it's gone, until pieces of it that we always counted on are gone. And what you just experienced, what all Americans, if they sit up straight and look carefully at what has happened, what we've just experienced is a real trouncing of the Fourth Amendment.
That's the unreasonable search and seizure provision, as I recall. Is that right?
Exactly right. The Fourth Amendment is that assurance that the founders thought was so important that we would be safe in our homes and our personal effects, that they put it into the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution and in the Bill of Rights. And I think that what we misunderstand or what we were at risk of losing is a full understanding of what that recent raid means. In some other country, in the old Soviet-dominated Poland or Czechoslovakia or East Germany or Soviet Union, all of which I spent time in, it was not uncommon to sit in a home of someone who had that home invaded on the pretense of some lawful invasion, but it was really a political act. It was going after the dissidents. That's why I was sitting with them. And it was always chilling to me because I thought, my God, what is sacred if a person's home is not sacred? And if they can't, you know, all their effects were rummaged through very often. They were taken, the effects were taken, and sometimes the people were taken. And it was a truly chilling thing. So to read how this went forward, and the reason this is so unusual, get away for a moment from the salacious facts that the media loves to report. The reason this is so unusual is that you have an attorney-client privilege, and in this case, the only reason that can be penetrated is if the attorney is uncooperative and involved in some crime of his own. Well, in this particular case, and it has to be pretty egregious to go into a home, go into an office. In this case, they went into three separate locations of his and took everything, because you're violating the attorney-client privilege of not only one client, but all the clients. And you're going in after his personal effects. So in this case, this attorney, by the record, was very cooperative. He was responding. He had given thousands of documents to the special counsel. He had done two depositions with the special counsel. And while it's true that there is a fraud exception, it's extremely narrow. We can't have the norm be around the United States that if you are politically affiliated with one party, and you have some shadow of involvement in anything, we're going to come into your home, rip it up, and take everything we want. That cannot be the norm. And so, interestingly, even case law says that this should be the last act. There's an exhaustion of remedies requirement. And I find it really chilling to me personally to hear that someone associated with the president, in a sense, because he is associated with the president, and nevertheless being cooperative in his production of information in the discovery process, nevertheless, without any particular reason to believe that that there are exigent circumstances, he's not trying to destroy this material. There's no indication of that. They get a judge, which is not hard, to sign off on a list of reasons that amount to, according to the prosecutor, probable cause to go in and take everything. That, to me, is a very chilling moment in American history. And while we don't, you know, we don't look at it right now as an inflection point, I think in a year or two we may.
Yeah. Let me turn to one other issue. You have apparently had an opportunity to take a look at least some of the excerpts that are available at the moment of former FBI Director Jim Comey's new book, being promoted breathlessly by the media at the moment. Tell us what you have found and some of the concerns you've expressed in your most recent Fox News column about this, Robert Charles.
Well, I think that the biggest issue that we see in this Comey book is that there's not much there. So what that says to me is that a different norm of what I'll call civil society at the political level has really been, again, abrogated. And that norm was that a president depends upon the inner circle. It doesn't matter whether it's President Obama, President Bush, President Clinton, President Reagan, President Trump. He depends upon an inner circle of senior, extremely well-informed experts, and they range broadly from his secretaries of defense and homeland security and his chief of staff to the head of the FBI. And what just happened here is that a head of the FBI, who I used to sit with, incidentally, when he was the deputy attorney general, when we were in the National Security Council and I was serving with Colin Powell and under George W. Bush, I always remember this fellow as being very even-tempered and quiet. And I think there came a moment where he started to speak out and got a lot of applause from the Democrat community, in particular for, you know, opposing surveillance of terrorists, and in particular for his words on framing things as torture as when we were trying to protect the country. All of a sudden, he was getting lots of applause. And the man that I knew as sort of quiet and more thoughtful, lifetime law enforcement officer, really evolved into a political figure. And what you just see in this book is the sad sort of terminus of that frame of reference. What he's done, Frank, is that he's gone from being a trusted public servant. He was fired really for bad judgment. And I mean, let's be honest. I don't care whether you're Democrat or Republican. Look back at what he's done in the last 2 years. Bad judgment is probably the easiest, best, and most accurate way to describe it. So, you know, he was fired for bad judgment.
Well, we'll take very much to heart the point you've made. You're an exemplary public servant in your own right, Robert Charles, and I think your criticism of him on that score is very well taken. Thank you for joining us today, and I hope you'll come back often. It's great to talk with you, and we appreciate so much your past service, as well as that you're rendering these days, among other places at Fox News, and of course, as a member of the Charles Group, LLC. Next up, we'll speak with Avi Jorish. We'll talk about innovation in Israel and terror financing around the world, right after this.